Heavenly King, Comforter, the Spirit of Truth, present everywhere and filling all things, the treasury of good and giver of life, come and dwell in us and cleanse us from every impurity and save our souls, O gracious one. Welcome, everyone. We have as our guest speaker Mr. Dennis Crinas, who's a graduate of our theological college in Sydney, St. Andrew's Theological College, who will be giving the talk entitled St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College, The Future of Orthodoxy Here in Australia. And Dennis is currently teaching at the Callesta School here in based in Melbourne, a Roman Catholic school, teaching religion and some other subjects as well. So I know many of you know Dennis as well, and Dennis, it's a great pleasure, particularly for myself and others who have been graduates of the Theological College, to be reminded of our good times there and our opportunities and blessings. Thank you for being with us.
I should begin by saying thank you for having me. I have given some talks before, but I must say this is the one that I've looked forward to probably more than any other. Sorry that we started late, but I guess we might take some comfort in the fact that last year when our Greek team went to play soccer against Portugal in the final, they were half an hour late. When not to be late, when you're playing in a European Cup final. But they were. I don't know why, but they were late and everyone was laughing about Greek time. So we are running on Greek time. Having a look at this talk right now, for those of you that are married, you'll be able to understand where I'm coming from when I say that I'm very lucky now that I realize that the word of is written up on that screen. If the talk had said the four best years of my life, I'd be in a lot of trouble right now. So I'm a little bit lucky that that's there. I'm sort of going, whew. But the truth is that prior to getting married and having a family, the best years of my life were at St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College. And I really want to give you a realistic view of what the college was like when I was there, and what it is like right now. So I've broken the talk up into two main parts, and while not much has changed, we can say not much has changed, we can also say that there have been some new changes made to the college, but they are changes for the better. The simple one would be that the bachelor's degree was attained when I was there over 4 years. Now you can actually get it over 3 years. So the structure of the course has changed. So the first part of the talk will be me talking about the college. And the information that I'm going to give you tonight in the first part of my talk is based on the college handbook, the 2005 college handbook. So it's not based on information. Some parts of the talk aren't based on information that I experienced. But the second half of my talk, which will include a lot of photos from our college times. So if you were a student there while I was there, you'll probably see yourself up in some of these photos. They're all photos when we're behaving, don't worry. Which we always sometimes did. which we did. So I'll begin with the first part of the talk. Just got to position myself right. Okay. Just running a little bit slow. It's also running on a little bit of Greek time. I might be referring to the college as the college during the talk, and that's because for anyone who's been to the college or has had strong affiliation with the college, you'll know that once you've been there, particularly if you've studied there, it's not just the college. It becomes the par excellence college in your life. It becomes the college of colleges. It is something that you can't go past a day or two without thinking about. It just pops into your mind. And While it's also a lot more convenient to say the college rather than St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College, it's something which we do as college graduates. We refer to it as the college, we say the college this, I'm going back to the college, and that's why the word college, that's the, is in inverted collars, commas, not collars, they're here, because it becomes the college. And so if I refer to it as the college, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Now, as an institution of higher learning, St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College, the college, constitutes the primary concern of the Greek Orthodox Church in Australia in the field of Orthodox Christian education. Primary concern. It's very important. If we can't educate the people who are leading the flock, if you just get anybody to do a shepherd's job, they won't know how to do it. And someone might think that being a shepherd is an easy job. It wasn't. You had to continually count your sheep. You had to know which sheep were present, which weren't, when there was danger, where you were going to move your sheep to next to feed them. Similarly, our priests, our bishops, are in charge of the flock. We are the flock, the people. And they're guiding us. And we just can't have anyone doing this. We need selected people who are educated, really, and ultimately leading us. St. John Chrysostom says that as priests, when he writes on the priesthood, no women and few priests should take up this calling of priesthood. One time at a talk, I actually said no men and few women, so I got it the wrong way around, and it turned my talk upside down. So lucky I got it right this time. But he says few men and no women are to become priests. Now, if you look to a priest or to a bishop as someone who is going to guide you spiritually, that person will lead by example. That person will be someone who would inspire you and welcome you and love and care for you, just like a paternal father cares and looks after his children. His Eminence Archbishop Stylianos has written an interesting article about the differences between a spiritual father and a paternal father, and how, while both are necessary, how much more important the spiritual father is for our salvation. Okay. I want to give you a little bit of a brief history on the college. Now, originally, Metropolitan Timotheos, who was here in the 30s as the leader of the Orthodox Church in Australia, he had mentioned and had said how important and how much we needed some sort of institution, some sort of place that would educate people to serve the church, whether they were priests, whether they were chanters, whether they were teachers. But that's about as far as we got. Back then the church was a lot smaller. We had probably less than a quarter of the amount of churches here. And the ultimate ambition, goal, then was to build churches so that we could put people. Well, it's raining outside, we're dry right now, obviously. The mission earlier on was building the churches. Our mission today has become to fill them. And if we can, fill them so that we need more of them to build. The dream of having some sort of institution went on. In the 1950s, Metropolitan Theophylacto had similar views that we needed an institution. And from 1959 onwards, Archbishop Ezekiel, not Bishop Ezekiel here, Archbishop Ezekiel, who was the Archbishop of Australia then, also saw the need for an institution, similar institution. So as a result, a committee for St. Andrew's War Memorial Theological Fund was established. It didn't get much further than that, but the fund was established. The money that was raised was limited, but the idea was there, the goal was there, the dream was there. And if you think about it, when you want to plant a tree, you can't put the seed in the ground and the next day think that you're going to get apples or fruits. It takes time. So when you establish some sort of religious institution or a school, if you've got a group of grade preps, they're going to take a long time before they're in secondary college, before they're in the workforce. It takes time, just like a tree takes time to bear fruit. So from whenever the college was going to open and start, we wouldn't have graduates and priests the next day. It was going to take time. And in 1975, things started to get into gear. We could say the engine was lubed up, new parts were added, refurbishment, the whole thing, and things started really moving. And that was when Archbishop Stylianos came to Australia in 1975. Now, having said that, I'm not passing judgment on our previous church leaders. They obviously had a different mission to accommodate for back then. But when His Eminence came to Australia, He continually reiterated the need for us to have not just a religious seminary or a place where we could educate, but a theological college, a tertiary theological college, one that would be equivalent and provide a degree equivalent to that of a university and provide sufficient spiritual and theological training for our new generation of Australian people. Those of you that have met His Eminence or know of Him will know that when He does something, He puts everything into it. And you can certainly see the fruits of that if you go up to Sydney and see the Theological College today. Now, in 1975, when His Eminence came here, the church was not how it is today. And when I say the church, I don't mean the buildings, just the buildings, I mean the organisation of it. Here, the Archdiocese was very different. As an Archdiocese in Melbourne, we didn't have a typewriter. Now, when you think about that, it really means that some new changes had to come in, some new steps had to be taken. So for the first few years of His Eminence being here, we needed to get the church, so to speak, running smoothly. Okay, and for the first few years, that's what he was doing. And if you've read any of his encyclicals, any of his talks, there's a book of his called Ensarcoseos to Dogmatos, and it's got a lot of information in there, talks that he's given. And you can just see from the talks that he's given how different the mission of the church was regarding our immediate requirements. And then in 1981, at the Clergy Lady Conference, His Eminence put forward the idea that now it's time to officially get things underway. We've got to get this theological college up and running. We've got to plant the seed. Because if we plant the seed in 10 years, it's going to take 10 years after that before we start seeing the results of it. It's got to be planted sooner. We can't waste any more time. And fortunately enough, Sir Arthur George, some of you may have heard of him, promised to give significant amounts of money. And from there, we started to, so to speak, get the ball rolling. But those of you that know anything about farming or anything about planting seeds, if you've done horticulture at school, if you've ever planted a seed before, you know you just can't take a seed and plant it in the desert. You're not going to get very far. You've got to prepare the soil. You've got to make sure the soil has nutrients in it. You've got to water it. You've got to toil it. You've got to prepare. And then when you plant the seed, you can't just expect fruits the next day. So part of the preparation meant that between 1981 and 1986, an interim committee was established, a building committee. Where are we going to have this institution? An administrative council, and very importantly, an academic council. So all of these things needed to get running. We're not talking about opening up a small business or a little library or a youth group, which all take a lot amount of work. This is a tertiary academic institution. It wasn't going to happen from one day to the other. And really, as graduates, personally, until I did a bit of research, I had no idea how much work actually really went into the setting up of this theological institution. I had a lack of appreciation for it, and I really couldn't understand how much work went into it. But if you read up, even in this small theological college handbook, you'll see a small taste of how much work it actually took. But from there, in 1986, the college opened. And the opening of the college became mandatory by virtue of the very nature of the mission of Australia. What do I mean by that? It was do or die. It was get this college up and running and get ourselves some priests and some church leaders and some teachers from it, or else we really are going to fall behind. We're not going to be able to keep up with the demands of our people. As a result, on the 23rd of February in 1986, St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College, the college, opened up. And I want to read out to you the speech of His Eminence that he gave. Well, not all of it. We've already started on Greek time. We don't have much time. As great as the speech was, I've just selected certain parts of it that I want to read out to you tonight. But he said this. The establishment... I won't do his accent or anything like that, but I'll just try and read it as clearly as possible. The establishment of the first Orthodox theological seminary in the Southern Hemisphere is not and could not be simply an achievement of an ethnic group or of a denomination. Orthodoxy does not represent a certain number of Christians, a mere part of historical Christendom, or an ideology dictated by geographical, racial, or political conditions. Orthodoxy is the faithful continuation of the undivided Christian Church of the first millennium, as decisively expressed in the ecumenical councils. Orthodoxy is a precious legacy for all of us. As such, it belongs to all Christians and, through them to the whole of mankind. That is why the importance of the college is expressed not so much through the term theological as through the qualification Orthodox. The Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Australia had many years ago felt that its faithful would not be properly served and would not be creatively integrated into this multicultural and polyethnic society unless a theological college were to be established. Yet the realization of such a sacred ambition was far beyond our actual resources. Theology, in Christianity, cannot be a subject of individual thought and activities. And here's one of my favorite quotes that he says. Theology is the deeper breathing of the whole church body as enlightened by the Holy Spirit, who is promised only in the plurality of church communion and not in the isolation of the individual scholar. Our theology is accordingly traditional, biblical, liturgical, and in one word, ecclesiastical. Otherwise, it cannot be regarded as the fruit of the Holy Spirit. We hope to be enabled to serve in a creative way not only our church, but also Australia and the universal society of peace, reconciliation, justice, and sanctification, which is God's ultimate will for His entire world. And that's taken from The Voice of Orthodoxy, which came out in March 1986. So, what has the college achieved so far? Let's have a brief look. The college is actually already enabling the church to meet its pastoral needs and in our times and in our environment, while at the same time preserving a balanced view of Orthodox tradition and life. Some of you may not know this, but St. Andrew's Theological College, the college, is the only institution of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere. If you have a look at the continents of the world, Europe, Asia, North and South America, Africa, Australia, and of course Antarctica. Not many people live there though, it's a bit cold. You'll find that we have three major continents in the Southern Hemisphere, and there's only one Orthodox theological college of this sort in the Southern Hemisphere. What's the college done? Right now there are 14 students studying at the college. This is the latest information. All right, so you are some of the first people in Melbourne to know some of these main statistics. It's a good word, isn't it? Statistics. Just got to fix my S up. From 1990 to 2005. Now, we said that the seed had been planted early on. The theological college started moving along, started educating, but we couldn't expect results the next day. In 1990, the first graduates graduated. And between 1990 and 2005, we have had 73 students from St. Andrew's receive a Bachelor of Theology. 73 graduates. Two of them from the college have received a Master's. Many other students, though, have gone to Greece or have gotten Master's degrees from Melbourne or Sydney or other institutions. But from St. Andrew's, two so far have gotten a Master's. And one person has gotten a Grad Dip A. I Not sure exactly what the grad dip A is, and I apologise for that, so I won't be able to answer any questions on that. I was on the phone with the college registrar at Dasso, and he did explain it to me twice very well, but I just couldn't get it. Sorry. My mind was elsewhere, I don't know, my son was trying to climb over my head, I don't know what it was, but I didn't get it. So perhaps when you all inquire to go to the college, you will find out from Dasso yourselves. As a result, we've had 23 priests ordained. I actually have a list here of which church they're at and where they're currently serving. So 23 students, graduates of the college, who are currently priests. 12 of them are in New South Wales, 3 of them in Victoria, one of whom is Father Chris, another one is Father Jacobus Tsigounis, who is in St. Anariyat in Oakley, and the other one is Father Emmanuel Capandis, who is at Moonee Ponds. We have 5 graduates now in Queensland, 1 in Greece. 2 deacons, both of whom are in New South Wales, and we also have 2 monks. One of them is in New South Wales and one of them is in Greece. Now, if you have a look and you say, a lot of people say, oh, 23 out of 73, that's not very good at all. Not everyone becomes a priest. And you don't become a priest as soon as you graduate from the college. I know of a few students who are ready. They're just waiting to get married and start a family, and then they'll probably get ordained very quickly after that. But not everyone that goes to the college goes there to become a priest. We have a number of graduates who are teaching in schools as secondary teachers. We have students working in parishes, giving sermons, working in various places, but still involved with the church. I think there are 15 or 16 of those 73 in Melbourne right now. 3 are ordained. And off the top of my head, from speaking to them, I would say at least 4 to 6 of them. I always leave a buffer zone, so at least 4, possibly 6, would get ordained over the next 4 to 5 years, which is pretty good. Okay. Educational standards. This is very important. The college itself is very good at this. I'm a big fan of the educational standards which the college has right now. And the task of ensuring appropriate academic standards and requirements which would be applicable to both faculty and students has been very, very much pursued, and a lot of time and thought has gone into this. The college is a member of the Sydney College of Divinity, which is the New South Wales, we could say, head honcho for theological institutions. If you're a member of the Sydney College of Divinity, that means you get tertiary theological recognition worldwide. And so, as a full member of this institution, it means the degree itself is very well recognized. It has a high standard of scholastic excellence, so you're not going there and colouring pictures of the Virgin Mary and of saints like you would at Sunday school. You're actually being trained scholastically at the same level that you would be at a university. St. Andrew's is committed to the principle that students at the university level should be taught by scholars. And these scholars themselves need to be engaged in advancing knowledge in their particular field, not just saying, I've learnt enough and that's it. The lecturers of the college are lecturers who advance themselves, who don't just learn a thing or two and say, oh, this is what I know, here you go, good luck. They are continually bettering themselves. And what this means is people lead by example. Think back into secondary school. Who were your teachers that impressed you, that left permanent, indelible marks on you? Don't think of the ones that let you play up. Think of the ones who taught you, who educated you. Picture them in your mind. What did they have? They loved what they taught. So just make sure you take out the ones that let you play up. They're not the ones we're talking about now. The ones that loved what they taught. The ones that loved what they taught so much that they kept learning about it and bettering themselves at it. That's what the theological college practices. That's what the theological college does. It gets doesn't just get anyone. It gets lecturers who, using the correct language in church, are very good at their job. Now, from the very beginning of the college opening, I've got to remember this, the college has sought to promote a scholarly, collegial atmosphere, and from the very beginning, published what looks like this, Phronima. It's an academic theological journal. The Archbishop writes in it every year, and other people that write in here are lecturers, and the most recent one actually has three college graduates who've also written in there as well. Well, I'm doing a bit of a promotion now. You can subscribe and receive back issues or current issues. They're not too expensive. I think they're $20, $30, including postage and handling, and they'll mail them straight to your house. Just call Tasso and ask for them. They're a very good read, particularly for people who want to, further than reading more than just Timothy Weir, The Orthodox Church, which is a fantastic book, which gives you an introduction to orthodoxy. This here looks at current issues, things that will certainly get your attention. So we have the Phronima. And in the very first issue, His Eminence actually explains why we've used the word, why he's used the word Phronima for our scholastic journal. Now, I won't go into that because, as we said, we're running on Greek time. In 2001, we also got this established, Vima, which is our Greek Orthodox voice here in Australia. I don't know how many of you read the Herald Sun or The Age, the Nels Cosmos, or any of the other papers that we have here in Melbourne, but I think we, as Greek Orthodox, or even as Orthodox people here in Australia, have no excuse for not reading this. It comes out once a month. It costs a dollar. There are articles in here from the Archbishop, from college graduates. It is our Greek Orthodox, honest and true voice here in Australia. And I encourage you, I ask you, I implore you to get a copy and read it. If you can't read Greek, that's fine. It's in English as well. We also have this. The college is ultimately getting better and better. And actually, I'll leave it. I'll talk about that later. I'll talk right now. I will talk about that. Sorry. Educational standards. When I was at the college, all that was available was the very top one, a Bachelor of Theology. If you wanted anything else, you would further your studies outside of the college. Doing a Master's or getting your Honours or getting a Master's of Arts or anything else weren't available. Now they all are. Now I can speak, I think, quite personally and give you a lot of information on the top one, on the Bachelor of Theology. I don't know too much about all the others, but I have gotten information from the College Handbook, which I'll very briefly finish presenting to you. But the college has really taken some huge steps going forward. And to read and learn that the college has achieved so much more, it's quite touching, especially when you've been part of it, because you think, well, this is available and it wasn't available when I was there. They've got this now and they've got that now, and how much more can the church now attain with it? Now we think about ourselves and we say, oh, only 23 graduates. Oh, in the next 4 or 5 years we might have another 5 or 6 here in Melbourne alone. Australia wide, eventually, it is going to be the college which is ultimately going to be providing the church with our priests and our teachers and very well now our chanters, which is a very well established Byzantine music chanting school there. Those of you that have heard me chant will know that I didn't get very good grades at Byzantine music when I was at the college. This is one question that I knew would pop up, so I thought I'd try and help out with providing some of the information here and now. Normal entry students. In order to get in, you need a high school certificate. Primarily, you need a high school certificate, secondary college certificate. And you need a university entrance score, a rank score of 75. If you get 74.9, I don't think it's like the system which we have here that you get knocked back for first round. I'm sure if you got 74.9 or 74.8 or close to, that they would present your application to the board a second time if you didn't get in. Ultimately, though, they do want students who have a minimum of 75 as a TER enter score. The reason why I say that is because someone the other day said to me, look, I only got 74.5 or 74.6. I can't go now. That's it. It's all over. But I said, no, it doesn't work that like that. It's not so harsh, so to speak. Another way of getting in is mature-aged students who are 21 years or over, and special entry students. The categories basically mean that you might not have finished secondary school, or you might be over 21 and took up a different sort of education but decided that you want to start theology later on. There is just a clause that you will be reviewed at the end of the year, so they'll have a look at your results. And if you haven't been showing up to lectures and have been sleeping when you're supposed to be in chapel and holidaying at Manly Beach when you're not supposed to be in lectures, then obviously you won't be encouraged to come back for the second year. Okay. The Bachelor of Theology program itself is not just academic, it's also spiritual and practical in nature. When I say practical, I mean its purpose is to also impart through knowledge, through skills, very importantly through frunima, which really struggled to translate into English, mentality, attitude, for Orthodox theology and spirituality, for diakonia, so for ministry, and for an Australian context. The college is trying to educate the future of Australia and the future of Australia that will accommodate for the people of Australia, be they Orthodox and non-Orthodox. So, three main things: spirituality, faith, and academic excellence are the three main goals which the college tries to draw from us as students of the college. Having said this, St. Andrews isn't a secular institution. The antonym of secular is spiritual. St. Andrews Theological College is what we would call a spiritual educational institution. Think of the biblical quote, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Taken from Luke. As significant to St. Andrews as the lecture rooms are the library and the study places, the lecture rooms, the chapel, the place of worship, all of these have a very important part to play. All scholarly endeavor, all educational endeavor, is ultimately a reflection upon the glory of the triune God, of God as Trinity, and His revelation. As soon as we say, oh, I want to go to the theological college because I'm interested in learning a few things about God, what's the scope, what's the purpose, what's the stoko, what's the target, what's the aim? Okay, who are we trying to glorify? Are we trying to glorify ourselves? Are we trying to make our parents happy? Are we going because, well, it's an institution and it will accept me? Or are we going for God's glory? The very first lecture that His Eminence did to us in our first year was called Introduction to Theology, and this was the first part of the lecture, and it was quite awesome to have that put forward to you. Theology is about God's glory, and anyone who's studying theology must have as their ultimate purpose God's glory, not their own. If you want your own glory, go become a philosopher. Become like Aristotle. And famous, remembered for all time. Aristotle is an ancient philosopher from very earlier on. He, I think, 2nd to 3rd century BC, he actually educated Alexander the Great, who was one of his students. I'll try not to talk too much about Aristotle, sorry. Alright, now, I remember when I was at the college, one of the biggest qualms people had, and you can understand why, is that it only was open for males. And that's because its ultimate its main objective is the education of our priests. And the facilities weren't available for both males and females. And what that meant was, you know, you've got boys living upstairs, boys will be boys, 18 to 40 years old, and the showers, the toilets, etc., didn't accommodate for both males and females. Today, they still don't. However, what we do have available is summer school, summer and winter school, I should say. And they have intensive courses, and we've got someone here who can shed more light on it because I haven't attended any of these intensive courses. But it is available for people who want to do accredited intensive courses, and there's two in January. The dates haven't been set yet, or they may have. When I spoke to Anastasio last week, they weren't set. And so there's two in January, Introduction to Theology and Christian Initiation and Divine Liturgy, and there's two other ones, Introduction to Biblical Hermeneutics, Hermeneutica, and Byzantine History in July. So the college, as it progresses, is doing more and more. So this is one thing that's available for people who want to study. It's not only for females. There's people of both sex attending, and they run it very similarly to the way the college is run, with chapel attendance, going to chapel and praying. And perhaps we could get you to speak about it a little later. That'd be good. If you have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them at the end of the talk as best I can. If you're interested in finding information, would like a copy of the handbook to read up on yourself, would like a copy of your own phonema, then call him. You can get the number at the end, or email him, and he'll be more than happy to help you. When I was at the college, geez, I've said that a lot tonight, haven't I? I hope I don't sound like the new kid at school who kept saying, when I was at my school. No, well, you're not at your school anymore, eh? I hope I don't sound like him. But when I was at the college, Dasha was there. He was in the year above me, and in my third year, he became college registrar, which was good. So get in contact with him. You should all be writing to apply. You have to apply by October 31st. Okay, this here has to be one of my favourite photos. One of my favourite photos, not my favourite photo. I've got lots of favourite photos of my wedding and my kids. It's just one of many favourite photos. This is a photo taken of the college from the eastern side, right next to the college's Royal Prince Alfred Park. Towards the left, you'll see the building of the Archdiocese. Towards the right, you'll see the college. A lot of memories there. But prior to getting married and starting a family, the best years of my life was spent in Sydney. As a student of St. Andrews, I really have some special memories, and I'd like to pass them on to you today. I'm certain that many other graduates of the college feel the same, and it's a special place for many reasons. And I want to provide you tonight, especially if you're a prospective student, with a personal insight as to what college life was like. If this is something you're going to do over the next 3 to 4 years, or for 3 to 4 years of your life, then, or you're thinking of going up to summer school, then I hope that I can shed some light on what it was like. If you look back, and you look back into your life and you think of some of your favourite summer days, you probably come up with a day at the beach, you probably come up with, I don't know, first time you got to ride on a jet ski, or when you rode on a canoe and kept falling off, or something fun that you would have done in summer. Water fights at Greek school, you'd hide from the teacher and throw water bombs at each other. Maybe I'm pulling out too many skeletons of my own here, I don't know. But you look back, these memories will be embedded in your mind. Prior to getting married and having children, sorry, my wife's here, I'm feeling a bit of pressure here, I've got to make sure I don't upset her. Prior to getting married and having children, my most memorable summer day was the day I left for Sydney. Now, I hope I don't sound egotistical, but I keep on saying I, but I guess because I'm giving the talk and I'm talking about my experiences, there's no other real pronoun other than I and my to use, so I'll do my best. I remember that day, and I remember leaning against my suitcase at Spencer Street Station. I remember how hot it was, and I just remember waiting for that train. And I can remember seeing the clock tick. I can remember hearing the sound of the trains and the people bustling by and people loading up the train and people getting ready to go. Something inside me knew that this next step, getting on that train, would mean that the next part of my life was going to be very different. I don't know how I knew it. I don't predict the future or anything. I don't have any sort of prophetic powers. But something inside of me told me that it was going to change life. And it did. And it was also on that platform that I met three of my co-students, three people that I'll be studying and living with, and three co-students who, along with five other particular students when I was there in my graduation, not only went on to become lifelong friends, but brothers. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Where? Here's a nice picture of Sydney. Those of you who are very fanatical about Melbourne and have a great love for Melbourne will not like that picture. That's probably because we don't have that. Sydney as a city is a very picturesque, a very beautiful city. And it really is the tourist destination to go. During the Sydney Olympics, we were up in Sydney. And I remember some of the Americans, some of the people from the United States of America getting off the train, asking me why Sydney isn't the capital of Australia. You mean it's not the capital? Is it Melbourne? What about the Queensland? What about that one? I said, no, it's actually Canberra, which is a real small place. In New South Wales, which if you drive too quick, you might miss. But we won't go into the history behind why Canberra became the capital. But one of the things about being at the college was you find that you get students from all over Australia, and you become very competitive about which city is the best. Rather than talking about religious matters, which what's important, you might argue about these sort of things. Nevertheless, I'll go on. It is in Sydney. People say to me, why is the college in Sydney? Well, it's very simple. It's very simple. Think of people who had shepherds. They never strayed too far away from water. There was a central watering hole where you would take your flock so they could drink water. If you went too far away, you'd lose some of your sheep trying to get back. Think of Sydney kind of like the centre of the bulk of Melbourne's population. Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. The Archdiocese has been strategically placed to be somewhat in the middle of those. It needs to be in a major city. Sydney's the biggest city. It needs to be close to Melbourne, close to Adelaide, close to the centres of where the majority of the population are. Unfortunately, Perth misses out a little bit, but if we wanted to accommodate for Perth, we'd be in Cooper Pedy. So we don't want to go to Cooper Pedy. We're not after opals. It's a bit hot. We need to accommodate for everyone. So the college is in Sydney. Yes, there are a lot more Greeks in Melbourne. Yes, I understand that. People will always argue that. But if it was in Melbourne, then we'd be further from Brisbane. We might be a little bit closer to Adelaide, but we'd be further from Sydney. Sydney's central. And I'm a big fan of the college in Sydney. It meant I got to be away from home for 4 years, so I got to experience life in a different city. We often joked about getting a four-year holiday package, which it actually wasn't, which was something very far from. That's a sign that I walked past every day a number of times. That's a sign at the front of the Archdiocese in Sydney. I don't know how many times I've looked at it and read it, but I love reading every word, because there's the college sign, Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Australia, St. Andrew's Theological College. There is the college. You can't see it from here. There it is. On the right, you have the Archdiocese building. In the background, you can see the cathedral. There's a shot of the Archdiocese in Sydney. I love these photos. They're not my best photos, but I love them. Just got some shots there for you. We'll go back to them later if you like. You can have a look. Where is it? When we arrived in Sydney, in that hot February morning, we learnt our new address, St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College, Redfern, New South Wales. I like to refer to it as home. Not just because it was for four years home, but it was where the stohos, the main objective, the ultimate objective of our lives, was clarified. Where we knew what we wanted to do, what we had hoped for growing up as kids, what we dreamed of, had started to become reality. We're still quite far away, but it's such a special place because I now knew, without a doubt, what I wanted to do. The college itself is based at the same headquarters of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Australia. And pretend you're reading a holiday tourist sort of package, destination sort of thing. And listen to this. Based at the same location as the headquarters of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Australia, the college's location, in my opinion, is the perfect position for such an institution. It sits immediately next door to the Royal Prince Alfred Park, south of the Sydney CBD, a one-stop train ride, and a healthy walk from Sydney's Darling Harbour, with the University of Sydney only a short walk away. Sold. You want to go there, right? Maybe not. But I think that's a real good summary of where the college is located. You'll see it's right on Cleveland Street. If you walk 1.5, 2 kilometres, Spiro, down Cleveland Street, you get to the University of Sydney. If you go 5 kilometres the other way, you get to the SCG. So if Richmond was playing Sydney, it was good. You could go watch some football. Regent Street has a main taxi pit stop on it, where probably 25% of Sydney's taxis stop at some part of the week, at one time or another, refuel, eat. It sits right on the main train line of Sydney. You've got Redfern Station. The next station is Central Station. The station after that puts you right in the heart of the city. And I remember being there when I was at the college and trying to listen to the Archbishop lecture us. And beneath us, they were digging the hole to pass through to the airport in preparation for the Olympics so that a train would run express. And he would be lecturing and they would be using dynamite explosions underneath to break the huge bits of concrete underneath, and the college would slightly tremble. And he would be lecturing us, and then the noise of the trucks outside and of the trains, all we would hear him lecturing, and then you would just hear all this noise and just see. And no one was really brave enough to say we didn't get that, so we just sort of had to ask a similar question next lesson. It wasn't our fault, it was the trucks of next door, all the construction going on. But now, you may have heard the Archbishop was at court for some people who were slandering him and were making up a lot of false information about him. And he was awarded a large sum of money for being slandered. And he put all that money straight into the college. And as a result, the lecture rooms got soundproof windows, which weren't too soundproof, but they were very expensive soundproof windows. The college was refurbished. And it was totally transformed, as I'll show you now in some of the photos. It was basically 90% of the sound that was on the other side of the window. If the door was shut as well, you would get rid of. So most of the sound was, you might have seen Ace Ventura when he's screaming and then he closes a sliding door and you can't hear him screaming anymore. Well, you might have seen it. All right, here's a photo from the service station. You can see the college on the left and the cathedral on the right. The cathedral is we'll talk about the cathedral in just a minute. That's another one of my favorite photos. Have a look at it. Just such a nice place. It's very emotional just to look at it. I'll let the 1,000 words that picture tells you. Here's the Royal Prince Alfred Park. Love Royal Prince Alfred Park. Every day on St. Patrick's Day, the Catholic Church has a huge celebration there. Huge, noisy celebration, and it's packed with people. The Royal Prince Alfred Park is a Sydney landmark, and the college is right next door to that. And growing up as a boy, I was always upset at my dad for always having such a small backyard, and any backyard that existed was Domatis. And so you could never really play or have fun in the backyard. And then I went to Sydney and I had a bigger backyard than I could have ever hoped for. There's a swimming pool there, there's basketball courts, there's everything. Well, not everything, but lots of things. All right? Here's a shot of the park from right next door from the college. Oh, and bats. If you like bats, there's plenty of bats in those trees. We used to play a lot of soccer there. It was fun. That's another shot from that same window, but looking towards the city. So you can see what sort of close proximity the city has to the college. And that there is the major tunnel that runs straight to the airport. The train runs and goes straight to the airport. At night, when you hear the trains, it's just a little sort of humming sound, and it's good to fall asleep to. At the beginning, it wasn't, but later on, it became very good. That's a shot of the city from the back steps. The city was very close. Now, I'm not saying this to you so you say, oh, I'll go to the college, I'll get a place to stay, prime real estate, and I'll get to live near the city. It'll be fantastic. I'm just showing you where it's located for not any real major reason, but I think it's a special place, and where it's located is important. You've got easy access to many of the churches nearby. Public transport there is fantastic. If you've been to Sydney, you can get around from place to place very well. And the fact that it's so close to the archdiocese, so close to the city, so close to the universities, makes it all the more special. It's kind of like eating something very nice and then adding a bit of flavor, a bit of extra flavor to it. Here's a picture of the cathedral. I think it's a 17th or 18th century building. I'm not exactly sure. The archdiocese recently restored it. It's a beautiful building. It's a shot there of the bell tower. And this is important. On the side of the cathedral is a little door, and inside that door is the college chapel, which is dedicated to St. John the Evangelist. This was the central place of prayer and worship for us as students at the college during our studies. And it was also a essential and fundamental part of college life. During weekdays, we actively participated in the matin service, the Orthros, and the liturgy, some of us more than others. And so we would be there for prayer service at 8:30 in the morning, and that would finish at 9 a.m., and we'd have breakfast, and then we'd go to lectures, and then Vespers in the evenings from 4 to 4:30. This way, every day of lectures began and ended with prayer. And it allowed us to live our studies from day to day. And they became something more than just an academic experience. Theology for us at the college, with prayer starting and ending the day, became a way of life. And hence, this meant that we were all expected to participate and share in the liturgical life of the college under the guidance of a spiritual father. We're also expected to do our best to lead a sacramental, spiritual life. As a result, prayer and veneration played a very important and vital role that was immediately and directly linked to our studies. In the words of Evagrios the Solitary, if you are a theologian, you will pray truly. And if you pray truly, you are a theologian. While it's small, its size is perfect for the college students. And anyone that's been to the college will be able to tell you so much about every day beginning and ending there. One of my regrets at the college was when I had slipped in or when I hadn't been there on time and when I hadn't participated as much as I could have. And if I could change anything immediately about my studies, it would be that. That was and is my ultimate purpose, yes. I got married, had children, and I'm hoping that with God's help, sooner rather than later, that my women can go there for summer school, and you don't have to go there to become a nun, but not that I know of. They could have, not that I know of. We do have people who sit in lectures, but they are males and females who just want to come along and listen. I remember people sitting in. But, yeah. Okay. On our first day of lectures there, that's our year. And there we are. Jeez, looked a lot younger then. That was us, and we were there in that section there because on our first day there, His Eminence, Archbishop Stylianos, gives us each a copy of the New Testament in New Testament Greek, and we each get our own copy. And here's me receiving my first copy of the New Testament in Guinea Greek from His Eminence. He's blinking in that photo. It was a good photo because it was taken right at the right moment, wasn't it? Okay. Living Within. This is a photo taken from the side of the church, but that's the main door of the college there. And there's a number of times that we walked by there. There's another shot of it, nice and clear. Living Within was a fantastic experience. Now, a lot of students who are from Sydney don't live inside the college. They generally live at home and come during the day and study at the college. While I totally didn't agree at the time and I missed home and I missed my family, I now look back and I appreciate every second that I was there. With the dormitory upstairs and with the lecture rooms downstairs, one's mind and body were always, within the walls of the college. This meant that while you would study in class and absorb as much as you could while in your lectures, you would talk about it and discuss it with your friends, with your classmates, when you weren't in class. And so what you learned was relearned, retaught, spoken about, discussed, and it helped so much more in the education process. I think one of the reasons why there are some things which we can't help but forget is because of this process of discussing it and talking about it all the time with each other. Furthermore, that's us on our first day at the college with His Eminence. That was my year. I said there are 14 students currently at the college. In my year, we had 12 students. Now, while they all didn't make it because at some point along the journey they realised that it perhaps wasn't for them, or perhaps they had to repeat a year, various reasons why we all didn't make it. Being together and living it together is what made it so much more special. Father George Vasiliadis, who was one of our lecturers there, he's not there anymore, he said to us that «Αν κάτσεις και φας μπριζόλες με έναν φίλο», if you sit and eat, results with a friend. By yourself, sorry. Μόνος σου. Δεν είναι και τόσο νόστιμες. Αλλά αν τις φας με καλή παρέα, γίνονται πιο νόστιμες. If you sit and eat them with good company, they become so much more tasty. Even if you're eating, he said to us, dry bread. Even if you're eating something that's tasteless, if it's in good company, it becomes so much nicer. And that's what the college was. It was a fantastic experience, but being able to experience it in such good company was what made it so much more special. Here's a shot of the college at the time. There were 33 of us in my first year. So the college is less than half the number of students currently attending than what we had then. Was it because we had more people interested then? Was it because interest has dropped off? Was it just it happened and it occurred? It was by sheer coincidence that we had so many people interested? I don't know. Now, here's a day of chapel. The bishop came down to check that we were all there. You can see he's got his list there, marking us all off. I was there. I took the photo. Not everyone made it today. They got in a bit of trouble. Alrighty. Now, we weren't at home anymore. We weren't living the lives we were accustomed to. We didn't have our parents looking after us, cleaning up after us, making sure we were doing our homework, making sure we had food to eat. We learned to live in our new home. We learned to live in our new family surroundings and to take care of ourselves. Our parents weren't there anymore. We cooked and we cleaned together. We also ate a bit of takeaway together. In turn, we learned to live, pray, and study together. We became more than just friends or mates or comrades. We became more than just brothers. We became all of these combined. We became syndrophy. I never recognized the importance of the word until Archbishop Stylianos analyzed it in one of our lectures, and if you've ever heard the Archbishop speak, you'll know that he can't give a talk without analyzing one or two words and breaking them down. And in the words of Aristotle, Αρχή Σοφίας ήταν ονομάτων επίσκεψης. The beginning of wisdom is in the terms. Analyze the terms. Dig through the terms. Break them down. And this word, συντροφή, explained that it originally came from two words, syn, meaning with, or in the company of, and τροφή, meaning food. And originally used as a term for one to describe someone that you would eat with, it later took on its modern day meaning. Because we formed such strong friendships in the college, and we also ate together, I like to use this word συντροφή to refer to my fellow students. This is us going bowling one night. I thought I'd just include it there. Some people think that you go to the college and you forget how to have fun. And you just study all the time. No. While we didn't get to do this too often, we still managed to have some very good times together outside of the college. This is us on retreat. Every year the college organises a retreat where we go off for a couple of days together, and the bishop and the archbishop talk to us, and we discuss various topics that are of interest. Every year there's a theme, and we invite a guest speaker. The guest speaker might be the bishop, it might be a priest, it might be a theologian. They vary every year, and here we are in one of our group shots. How many priests can I count? You can see Father Jacob. How many priests can I count from that photo? Five. So five of them now have beards and wear cassocks and are priests. Hopefully more very soon. Oh, this is a very important night of our lives. This is during the World Cup, so I'll just move on that one. Oh, our college bus. It was renowned for breaking down, and so we pushed it around just as much as we drove it around. Here's our... Here's our college downstairs, our sort of like our common room that you had in year 12. It was where we kicked back a bit, and here's with our ping pong table. This is a look at the corridor, where the dorms were, where our rooms were. And each one of us had our own little dorm, our own little room, which we used, of course, to study in and to sleep. And we spend recreational time in the common room where you saw where we had our dinner and where we had probably our most memorable experiences. It didn't matter what we did, whether we were playing sport or shopping or attending a Vespers for a parish or in a service together or praying together or studying together. It didn't really matter what we did or where we went. Our common connection to the church and the college meant that as long as we were together, it didn't really matter what we did. Here's another shot of us on retreat. I think that was in my second year. Here we are having a very special meal together. This is one which we cooked ourselves. It's known as pasta and a red sauce from the shelf. Simple but effective, and we are there. This is at the end of Nistia one night. We went down to McDonald's. bit of soccer. That's one of the main trees at the front. Here, this is a very special meal which we had together. You can see some of us using salad bowls. It's known as a la cornflakes and milk. That's, I'm sure most of you know what it is. this is immediately after chapel. So the chapel service is finished. We'd go down, grab a bite to eat, and then we'd go to our lectures, to our classes. Here we are on retreat again. A group shot, a bit of archery. During my second year, the downstairs of the college wasn't the lecture rooms. Lecture rooms were upstairs. And the downstairs, being a kindergarten beforehand, was transformed and became our lecture rooms. Here we are doing a kind of dance for joy in celebration of the college growing. We just forgot to remove our cassocks when we were dancing. Here, this is what it looked like. So you can see in the background how it's all sort of getting fixed, renovated, and then this is what it became. Bishop Seraphim in Sydney designed it himself, and those of you who knew what this church looked like before Bishop Seraphim was the parish priest here and know what it looked like afterwards we'll have a fair idea that he's particularly good at presenting things well. And if you remember South Melbourne beforehand, the church was very different before. And when he became parish priest here, he didn't do everything, but he made a lot of changes. And as you can see, the church is very beautiful now. So there were our three main lecture rooms downstairs. There was another one also around the corner. There's a far-off shot from the lecture rooms. The college itself is, as I said before, fully accredited through the Sydney College of Divinity, and it holds very strong academic standards. It's an institution of higher learning. As students, we needed to be dedicated to our studies. Now, while I found the studies at times quite challenging, quite demanding, I wouldn't hesitate to do it all again if I wasn't married and if I didn't have these responsibilities. I would do it without second thought. I now wish, though, that I had the time that I had then to study, to read, to have time when what I was required to do was sit down and read and study. That I had that time that I could put there without having any interruptions or disturbances. It's something which you only appreciate when you don't have it. And you really only appreciate some of these things when they're gone. Special times. All right. The highlight of studies at the college... Oh, sorry, before I go on, here's another shot. The gardens, the grounds around. Very nice. A lot of memories flooding back. Here's a picture of Philip. Philip was a college registrar originally before Anastasio, and he's also now an associate lecturer with His Eminence, Archbishop Stylianos, and he was very good. There are some of the guys here tonight, they'll tell you that Philip was very good as a lecturer, and I enjoyed his lectures quite a bit, and he was fantastic. Here's a shot of us. There was some function for the college, so we're all in uniform here, and we all dressed up for the occasion. This was library hour. Twice a week, we had to go to the library for 2 hours. You went to speak, you had to study. While we didn't do that always the best, there were times when we did, often, usually, hopefully, most of the time, am I? but it was good to have a period of time where, that's it, study. You don't need to talk, read, write, research, analyze. The highlight of the studies at the college, I would say without a doubt, having said all of this so far, were the lectures of His Eminence Archbishop Stylianos. A lover of learning and an academic himself, his lectures were always the best part of the week of studies. That's not saying that the other lecturers we had weren't good lecturers. They were also fantastic. But there's always one diamond that stands out in the bag. There's one diamond that stands out amongst the cluster. And for studying at the college, it was his lectures. There were so many things that I could use as examples, but I realise time's ticking on and I don't want to hold you up for much longer. We're in great debt to all our lecturers there. They were a fantastic team. And looking back at the talent that we had from the scholars and the number of scholars that we had there at the college, it's just amazing to think that all of these people with all these initials next to their names and all their gifts were teaching in the one institution. Oh, that's, why is that there? That's a shot of my desk. Okay, just a bit messy. This is one of us in one of the lectures. It's our final exam. Spirey, remember that? That was our final exam, mate. You can see the V drink in the background. A bit of a sugar rush. The college holds something that we don't have here in Melbourne, and that is one of the largest collection of Orthodox books at the college library. According to the handbook, from what it says right now, it says that there are now over 13,000 monographs and 200 periodicals available in English and Greek there at the college. The library also has a full-time librarian present to assist students with their educational research. When we were there, there weren't computers available to us now. There's internet research. There's a whole lot of things there available. There is. It was very easy to lose track of time in there. It was easy to get lost within the contents of a book or with writing an essay. studying for an exam. It's a very neat, clean part of the college, one of the best presented, and it was really a nice place to study. Just walking in there, if you ever get the chance to go in there, you'll see how nice a place it was to study. This is the visit, if you can see right in the middle, next to the very tall priest, to his right, Father Thomas Hopko. He came and visited us and gave us a talk on Monday. It was something special to be part of. That's our last day of lectures. We made some t-shirts and we took some photos together. That was my graduating year. How many of us are still in Sydney? Some of us were from Sydney. Originally we had... There's five of us in Melbourne now. One, two, three. Okay. Four of us in Melbourne and the rest are in Sydney. At the back, Father Silouan is now a parish priest in Brisbane, and Father George Lontos on the left is a parish priest in Sydney now. This is us on our final day of chapel. Remember that day, Spiro? That's some of our final shots taken together. And that was us in our cassocks. One of the last shots that we took together. Now, for those who are prospective students who are thinking about going to study at the college, it's not one which should be taken lightly. To those who wish to study at the college, my advice would be think carefully, long and hard about your decision, as it's a decision which requires a lot of what we would say, contemplation, deliberation, thought again. As a prospective student, I would say, talk to your spiritual father about it, get his advice, meet and discuss possible entry with your local bishop, in this case, Bishop Ezekiel. I'm sure he'd be very happy to hear that you want to go to the college to study. And really, you should prepare yourself for some long and hard study, which is very interesting, and of course, contact Dasha for more information. To conclude, I'd just like to say that the college has a mini tradition. And the mini tradition which it's practiced, I believe, since the first graduates graduated in 1990, still goes on today. And while it's simple in theory, its purpose is quite profound. The graduates on the day of their graduation receive a small gift. The gift itself isn't all that special physically, it's a pen. And it's not the pen that's significant, it's the fact that what's engraved on the pen makes it special. The words omogalakte are engraved on the pen, meaning literally of the same milk. Think of a little baby who is being fed breast milk from another mother. That baby, with the other baby, may not have any blood relations, but they are both fed the same milk from the same mother. This pen is a symbolic reminder to all students who are graduates of the college that they were fed the same milk from the same mother while they were at the college. In other words, they received the same theological, spiritual, we could say scholarly orthodox education from the same college, the same mother. They, what we would call St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Theological College, the college, and hence become brothers in Christ. Probably can't see it from there, but you can come and have a look if you like. Can't have it. But it's got the words omogalakte engraved on there, and it's one of my prized possessions, not because it's... an expensive pen, they're not too expensive at all, because it's sentimental. And having said this, it was with great pride that I wrote an article in the paper, in the Vimmer, on the college, which is what I based a lot of the talk on tonight. And it's what I also used to scribble some of my notes on the talk. Looking back, I'd just like to say onto the most memorable, one of the most memorable summer days of my life, and for the best years of my life, aside from getting married and having children. I thank God for the opportunity to study at the college that has played such an important, pivotal role in my life. Thank you.
Thank you. You spoke of the mission of the church. Where does Greek language and culture fit for the next generation? Mm-hmm.
Think of a special treasure which a family, a group of people take, and they want to preserve it, so they put it in a box and they decorate the box, and the next generation comes along, doesn't look inside the box but knows that it's special and important, and because they know it's special and it was special to their parents, they make an even bigger box and decorate that as well. And this happens over the generations until you've got people later on who don't really know how special what's inside really is, but they know it's important, they know it's special, they know it was important to people before them. This is what can often happen to Greek culture and to Greek language. It's something precious, something special, but because Greek is in our, or most of our first language, and we most of us think in English, and when we want to say something in Greek, we sort of translate it, and when we hear something in Greek, we might be well versed in Greek, but ultimately we would probably understand it better if we heard it in English. Greek culture and Greek language can often become something which we know is special because it was special to our parents, but I don't know how much we've taken that into our lives, how much we've incorporated it. When we go to church, have we looked at English translations of the service? Have we looked at how important Greek language is to the service? So I think Greek culture and Greek language play a very important role because they tell us where we're from, who we are, where did we come from, who are our forefathers. St. Paul tells us to honour and respect the traditions of our forefathers. So I think they play an important role. I think they go part and parcel with the mission of the church. Having said that, though, if they become the only focus, the central focus of the mission of the church, then the mission of the church ceases to become something spiritual. It becomes something lingual and something cultural. So I think we need to take Greek culture and Greek language and hold on to it and preserve it as much as we can, remembering that it can't be our central focus, and that our central focus is God's glory and salvation. And if we can amalgamate those two, and I don't know how we could best do this, but if we can amalgamate those two, keep both, use both as best as we can, I think the church has got an excellent chance of going even more forward than what it already has. Yes. Thank you for asking that. That's a good question, and it's something I left out. Greek language, once upon a time, was an absolute must. Modern Greek is still taught at the college, and while doing it doesn't go to your degree, it's an internal requirement of the college that you do Greek language, you do modern Greek studies, because if we have a look at church now, the main language of the people going to church is modern Greek, and if our priests and our church leaders are going to be accommodating for these people as well, they need to be able to speak Greek. However, to attend the lectures, I would say now that one of our lecturers has left and is in Greece, who was only Greek speaking, isn't there anymore. All the lectures are done in English. So even His Eminence, who, I was speaking to Tasso Anastasio the other day, even His Eminence is doing a lot more English lecturing now than he was before. When I was there, I think it was a 60, maybe 70% English, 30 to 40% Greek. So it was very difficult to get through without Greek. Greek, I don't think, is a prerequisite. I don't say I think. Greek is not a prerequisite for entry, and it says that. And Greek is absolutely not a prerequisite for entry for summer school and for winter school at all. They're all done in English, and I might get Presbytero to tell us a little bit about that.
What are some of the opportunities for women to study at the college?
Good. Right now, the summer and winter school are probably the best opportunities. However, there is also the Masters of Arts in Theological Studies, and I know is available for females. And there is one more of those there that's available for females, along with the summer school. Now, I remember being at the college, there were some females who had sat in lectures. We had some of the nuns from the Sydney Monastery sitting in at times. But to receive the Bachelor of Theology from the college, I don't know if they've made that change yet, to be honest. I don't think that when I was there, they certainly didn't. You weren't allowed. And I would lean more towards saying no to do the BTH. You couldn't at the college, but I know you can do further studies there. So if you want to get your master's or something of the sort, you can. And the summer school is the next best option, which wasn't available before. So I think as time progresses, things will change. In Greece, you've got many female theologians studying theology. In the States, a lot of the seminaries, theological colleges have females studying there. So I think it's just a matter of time.
As Master of Theology, is that Master of Theology in Orthodoxy, specific in Orthodoxy, or is it Master of Theology in general?
Good question. Your supervisor would be Orthodox if you're doing a master's or a doctorate even through the college. All right. When you study, say, for instance, at ACU, I'm doing my master's through the Australian Catholic University. The master's I'm getting is very Catholic. But when it comes to studying, the lecturer encourages you to study according to your specific faith denomination. So I'm encouraged to read Orthodox scholars and base my responses, my analysis on what Orthodox scholars are saying. So they're very good in that sense. They're very liberal. Now, the college would will accept anyone coming in who wants to do further studies. We had a man there called Stephen Hughes, if you remember Stephen Hughes. He ended up doing his master's, and he was of the Coptic faith. And he wrote from a Coptic perspective, but was supervised by an Orthodox lecturer. So the lecturing you're going to get in your master's is going to be very Orthodox, but your response may not necessarily be purely Orthodox. It may be of a different denomination. Has that helped, or have I confused people?
Yeah, that's fine, yeah. Well, I also wanted to ask quickly, you may have mentioned this previously, because I didn't come early enough, but I've forgotten the question now. what prerequisites are there into becoming a student?
Very good. Prerequisites for coming to the college are, if you're straight out of high school, your TER is taken into account, your tertiary entrance rank, which needs to be 75 and above. But there are students who enter as mature age students, and their entrance is subject to their performance in the first year. So there's an application process. You need to get a letter from your spiritual father. You need to discuss it with your bishop. You know, it really is, I believe, that if you really want to go and you have the desire to go and you're not fresh out of high school, if you were 18 or 19 and you didn't get a good tertiary entrance rank, you probably wouldn't be accepted. But if you were of a mature age, so 21 or over, and you wanted to get into the college, and you had your spiritual father's blessing, your next step would probably be to come and meet the bishop and take it from there. And I'd say you'd be very likely to get in. Okay, that's because I know you. I've met you before. And I'm sure that His Grace, Bishop Brzezinski, would be absolutely rapt if you told him you were thinking of going to the college. Now I'm going to tell him you're going to be in trouble. But, your spiritual, the Archdiocese has told, I believe, spiritual fathers not to recommend people that wouldn't be suitable. And I think the person that knows you medically best is your doctor. Your doctor knows whether you've got a good heart, whether you've got high blood pressure, whether you've got diabetes, whatever you've got. Similarly, your spiritual father, if you've had a close enough and, you know, honest enough relationship with your spiritual father, will know you spiritually better than anyone else and will be able to provide you ultimately with a recommendation or not. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
While the microphone's coming over, I'd just like to say that we've had a variety of students come into the college. We've had students of Serbian Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Romanian Orthodox backgrounds, because this is the only theological seminary available. We also had the infamous Nick Brown. Nick Brown was from Brisbane. And he said he wouldn't mind if I mentioned his name tonight. Nick Brown was riding his BMX one day and rode into the grounds of an Orthodox church and said, "This place looks interesting." And it was near his 13th birthday and went inside the church and absolutely fell in love with Orthodoxy. and went on to become Orthodox when he got a little bit older, came to the college study, then was one of our best students. And he learned to speak Greek. And if you hear him speak Greek, he embraced Greek culture, Greek language, and he also very much, more than anything, embraced Orthodoxy. And I'm very proud of him. He's a very good friend of mine, and he's now working as in the parish of St. George in Brisbane, full-time, as a theologian in the parish. And it's a place where you certainly meet some very interesting people, but I won't stall any more.
Dennis, if you're not able to go to Sydney, is there an availability to do courses by correspondence at the college, or is that as an option?
Unfortunately, right now, only masters can be undertaken via correspondence, but you'll need to sometimes have some sort of contact with your lecturer, so that might be over the phone. And I don't know of anyone, because there have only been two master's students, and they were in the college that they got their master's. They have said that it's available, but I just find it difficult to see. You do have to go up to Sydney at least two or three times a year if you were doing your master's by correspondence. I think that would be very difficult itself. And I also think you would be doing yourself a dishonour. Why not be as close as possible to there? If you can't physically get there, unfortunately, that makes it very difficult. But when you're there, it's totally different. It becomes a way of life, especially with the fact that the chapel's there and the library's there. And the library just gives you access to what the fathers say. It gives you access to what all the scholars are saying about the Bible. It gives you access to what, you know, the solitary, the monks, you know, the modern-day deep thinkers are saying. It's just so much there. It really is an Orthodox centre for Australia, one of our Orthodox centres.
The actual duration of time that's in doing the course, and also, just briefly, can you outline a bit on the topics that are covered?
I have here the college handbook, because I don't remember them off my heart, I'll refer to it. The college is now, for the Bachelor of Theology, it takes 3 years to do, like any other BTH subject course. If you finish and you get your BTH and you want to go into priesthood, the fourth year now involves a lot of pastoral work. So you go out, you get a graduate diploma in pastoral work. So you go to visit people in jails and practice your pastoral theology. You go to hospitals. You go and visit neonatal parents who have 3 and 4 month premature babies. And you really get to practice your pastoral theology, which is taught to you in the fourth year. When we were there, it was done over 4 years, but these subjects were incorporated over the 4 years. Because it's obvious that not everyone wants to become a priest, the theology is available for 3 years, and then the pastoral ministry degree, if you want to go on for priesthood, is your fourth year, your grad dip in pastoral theology. Subjects that are available. You have subjects, we'll start with theology. Theology is a major concentration, so when we say theology, you look at theology is introduced. You look at systematic theology. So you look at dogmatics. What is the Holy Trinity? Who was Christ? You know, how was he man and God? You look at the church itself. You look at ecclesiology, the infallibility of the church, as the Archbishop says. And yeah, one of his doctoral paper. We do church history. So you look at the history of the church over the years.